Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rat pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
ESPN is Colton Denning at Dubsco on X, and he is, the contributor, the main guy for Two Stripes CPD. I've told you about it before, but it is a one-stop shop for college football fans. If you are an absolute fanatic, he gives you old-school highlights, the whole nine yards. He also has a YouTube channel that has a fair amount of subscribers where he puts those highlights as well. But Colton, what's happening, man? How are you?
I thought you were about to bring me in on Pimp C's verse. I was like, I see how Gabe's doing it right now, but I'm doing good, man. I'm happy to be back on the show, bro.
Yeah, I didn't want to wait that long, you know? We have some long bumper music there. I couldn't let us get to Pimp C, unfortunately, as much as I wanted us to.
Well, we got big things to talk about, man. We're, 23 days away, I think, from the start of the season, so there's a lot going on.
Three Saturdays away, but I want to start with stuff away from college football, because I know that I would put you in the category of college football purist. Is that fair?
Yeah. I'll take that.
All right. Now, the House NCAA settlement came out, and we have $2.7 billion worth of settlement, the whole thing. But what this is going to do with the rosters is quite interesting to me, and I just sort of want your opinion on where we're headed with this thing. But there's no scholarship limits. 105 scholarships is what you can get to in college football. How do you feel about that? It feels like an elimination of the walk-on, which really sort of hurts my heart.
I feel like Tom Osborne's going to try to find any way to come back and get back into this era of college football where there's no scholarship requirements and anything. But no, you know, I think that obviously in football especially, whether it's from the the sentimental point of view where we see those videos every year of on either Twitter accounts or Game Day, I'll put them out of guys getting their scholarship and having to earn that, and you know, being in those locker rooms, what that means to not only the guys getting them, but to their families and to the rest of the team that sees players who work that hard. And you know, I think that it's probably going to have its benefits. It's probably going to have some unforeseen drawbacks, and it's another one of those things in college football now where we enter this new landscape, whether on the field or off the field, where I think we just kind of have to see how it's going to play out to know exactly, you know, what to think about it.
Yeah, it's frustrating for me having played with, like, really good walk-ons, right? Like, that's the thing. Anthony Miller was a walk-on. A guy by the name of Phil Mahew was a walk-on. Alan Cross, who ended up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a fullback eventually, he was a white shirt walk-on. He had to earn every bit of playing time he ever got. I mean, he had to earn getting a practice jersey, for God's sakes. Like, those stories are going to become fewer and far in between. And, that for me is a bit frustrating. Now, I wonder, how people will go about you know, filling out the rest of their roster that way. Do you find some developmental guys that you would take for preferred walk-ons before and just give them scholarships, or do you just try to get more depth? Either way, I do think the non-scholarship limit, going to 105 scholarships, I feel like that's just going to help the rich get richer, like everything.
Yeah, and that's really I think what this comes down to, because what I was going to say, and the thing that irks me about it is, like with a lot of the other changes we've seen in college football, how many, you know, outside of, I think we are on the page of, we think players should be getting benefits and,
sure,
you know, players getting paid, there's nothing wrong with that. But outside of that, to me, everything else that's happened, it's like, what's the real reason? What's the pure benefit to doing this? And in this scenario, I don't think that, like, there was a precipice of anything where it was like, hey, if we don't do this, the whole system is going to collapse, so we need to do this right now. It just felt like another one of those things where it was like, hey, the big schools want this, let's just do it, because what other choice do we have?
Right, right. That seems to be how it goes. If you have power, you get to flex that power. Now, we are, again, 3 Saturdays away from week 0. What are you looking forward to in week 0? I mean, I guess we got a Dublin game, Florida State, Georgia Tech. Is that sort of the one we're looking at? I know you're a sicko, though. You might like Montana State, New Mexico, something like that.
I'm looking at Delaware State, Hawaii, man. That 9 o'clock, because I'm on Pacific,
right,
you know, Pacific time, being in the Bay. So that to me is beautiful. But you know, it's just 4 games, and I think the Dublin game should be fun. I don't know if it was. I don't think it was last year's. It was 2 years ago where I remember it was Nebraska and Northwestern, and everybody thought that game was going to be, oh no, this is where Scott Frost and Nebraska stake their claim.
Yeah, get over the top.
This is where they turn it around. This is where everything starts. And then they just lost in like hilarious fashion. And that game really was the end of the Scott Frost era. And I don't think Florida State Georgia Tech is similar, because we saw what Florida State did last year, and we saw Georgia Tech really have a successful season last year. So to me, that one's kind of the most intriguing because of what Georgia Tech did at the end of last season. And Florida State, there are a lot of new pieces there. So, you know, maybe different environment, going over to Europe, maybe something happens. Georgia Tech, you know, pulls a stunner. But I think just having football on our screens, and you know, the 4 games, yep, aren't anything super special, but just having football back on our screens, and there's stuff to take away from all of them. You got Montana State, which is usually a tough FCS team, who's definitely going to beat New Mexico, and then SMU, who in that new look ACC, they might make some noise. They have a lot of really nice pieces, and Nevada isn't very good either. So I think it's just, you got to take it as just, hey, football is back on our screens. You enjoy those 4 games, and you start to ramp up for that next Thursday.
Now holler at me about Florida State, because my Memphis Tigers are going to see them in week 2 this year. And, it looks like Florida State's going to be coming off a bye week. But, you know, Memphis has to go on the road. But I saw Florida State was picked first in the ACC. I was a little bit surprised by that. I thought Clemson could potentially get over top because they have more returning players. Obviously, we know Dabo doesn't hit the portal. He says he's got high school transfers. That's how he gets his transfers. But were you surprised to see Florida State at the top with all the turnover they had on that roster?
I don't know if surprise is the right word. I think to me that is a picture of everybody just being cautious and not wanting to look stupid, because I think when you, like, if you put a blindfold on or you do a blind taste test of 2024 Florida State and 2024 Miami, I think anybody reasonable would say, yeah, Miami is probably the ACC favorite. They have, I think, they've loaded up pretty much through the transfer portal with quarterback. They're stocked on both sides of their trenches. And to me, just player by player wise, I think Miami's the best team in that league. But then you look at last year and, you know, what happened against Georgia, yep, Tech, and the way that their season went, and just kind of Mario Cristobal's reputation as a big game coach outside of, you know, the one game against Ohio State in 2021. I think that's the one thing that's kind of keeping people from picking Miami to be the conference favorite. And when it comes to Clemson, I think people have just kind of, we're far enough now from Clemson being in the playoff every year where I don't think a lot of people are expecting them to be at that 10, right. or not 10 win, but like 11, 12 win where they're seriously, you know, not just a playoff contender, but a national championship contender. So I think Florida State, even with all the turnover that they have and some of the new faces, I think they're being looked at as kind of the safe pick in this league that has a lot of question marks. And there's a lot of teams in that league, to me, in the mid-tier, where it's like you look at NC State with Grayson McCall and some of the pieces they have. You look at Virginia Tech, who really came on in the second half of last year with Tyron Jones at quarterback. The mid-tier of the ACC, to me, is exciting. And to me, Florida State is just kind of like that safe. Okay, we know they might not be where they were last year, but their floor is probably 10 wins.
Yeah. Now, people get on me for always going after Dabo, but I'm sorry. He says too many dumb things for me not to acknowledge them. But with his formula right now, no transfers, really trying to build through high school. I think the NIL, bankroll he has is pretty good, but he uses it sparingly. He's not super outward about it. He's not selling it out there on the open market or out there in the public eye. Do you think his formula can win another national championship? I'm just going to ask it that straight up.
I don't think so. The formula, I don't think, is the problem. I think it's the unwillingness to change within what we've seen, it just schematically, with their offense. We're on, what, year three or year four, if it's bad this year, of looking at Clemson quarterback play and being like, what's going on
there? He made that hire of Garrett Riley, and it feels like nothing changed.
Yeah, that was supposed to be the, now we're really, we're opening things back up. And last year's Clemson offense felt like the Clemson offense from the past two seasons. And if you go back and watch that game against Florida State last year, they should have won that game. They may have not had it in the bag, but like they were comfortably, feeling good about winning that game, and they kind of just fumbled it down the stretch. So for me, I think the NIL stuff and just what Dabo says is always going to get all the attention, just because he's a guy where you can point at and just be like, wow, he's a goofball, depending on what you think about him. But to me, that's kind of what is ultimately holding them back, because it's not like they don't have talent to at least be a playoff contender, especially now that we've moved to this 12-team system. But it just seems like offensively, they're not willing to do, I guess, anything different than they've done in the past 3 or 4 years. And you look back at the quarterback play with Lawrence and with Watson, and you think, how much were those guys masking?
Yeah, and I hate to be this guy, but it feels like the talent is just, especially in those skill positions, it feels like it's drying up. Now, granted, you have to have a quarterback to get the ball to those guys, but, like, the T. Higgins of the world, like, they're not
there
anymore.
Yeah, where are the wide receivers that you're really scared of?
Where are they? I mean, even Justin Ross had his moments, although later in his career it wasn't that great. But where are they? They're not there anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's where you're seeing them not be one of the top teams on the margins anymore, because you had guys like Trevor Lawrence, or you had some of those receivers who could just go up and maybe your defense did everything right, but it's just, hey, that guy's better than your guy.
Right.
And Clemson right now doesn't have that offensively. They still have a ton of nice pieces defensively, but like that first game against Georgia on August 31st, you're going to see, I think that's going to be the margin of that game is, hey, the baseline talent is, fairly similar, but Georgia's top guys are going to be a clear cut above what Clemson's top guys are.
Yeah. Now, talking with Colton Denning at Dubsco on X, Two Stripes CPD, and also YouTube channel. You can find it just by searching Colton Denning, D-E-N-N-I-N-G. Now, I have to let all my listeners know I'm talking to an Ohio State guy. That's fair. That's fair. I'm talking to an Ohio State.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we feel about this season heading into it? Is Will Howard the answer? Let me start there.
I think he's better than Kyle McCord. And we have to see what exactly that means. If that's like he is 20% better than Kyle McCord, I think that they're going to be in the mix with anybody to be in the national championship and be the best team in the country during the regular season. If he's only a little bit better, I think that that's still an improvement. If he's the same, then you're probably going to watch the same Ohio State team that you did last year. But I'm so excited for this season because There's no more excuses. And I'm somebody who's, I mean, you've seen me. I'm not an Ohio State fan who's defended Ryan Day for the past 2 or 3 years. So I think that, okay, now you've got your quarterback. You brought in Quinshon Judkins. You brought in Caleb Downs. What more do you need? Michigan is losing basically everybody. Jim Harbaugh left. You know, you bring in Oregon, who's, you're going to probably be the de facto other contender in the Big Ten, and you got to play them on the road. But even now, you can lose that game, and your playoff hopes aren't going to be shot. You have no excuse, at the very least, to not make the playoff, but to at least make a deep run. And everybody came back from Travion Henderson, Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, Denzel Burke. So to me, it's very much a put up or shut up, and it's, you know, you beat Michigan, you at the very least get to the Big Ten championship game, and you make a run to that Final Four, if not get to the national championship, or, you know, goodbye. Mike Vrabel's already in Ohio. He's with the Browns right now, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Mike Vrabel's just posted up in Cleveland right now.
Yeah, if they don't get through and, you know, really push to go win a national title this year, Ryan Day, what do you think about the warmth of that seat? How hot is it?
I think it should be as hot as anybody's in the country, because you look at, you know, now as an Ohio State fan, I'm looking at, you know, I'm not a super aggressive NFL watcher, but every Sunday night, Monday night, when they do the player graphics on the screen, and you see, you know, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, C.J. Stroud, and, you know, you see all of these big-name guys, and you're like, wow, he never beat Michigan, or they never won a playoff game, they never won a Big Ten championship. And at some point, like, I'm a college football fan. It's great that those guys are all having success in the NFL, but, man, I would like to see a win in the rivalry game. I would like to see a conference championship. That's what it's all about. And so, to me, his seat has to be as hot as anybody's, because, and this is something I asked last year after they lost to Michigan, I asked to the greater Ohio State world, you know, what are your favorite five Ryan Day wins at Ohio State? And the two main ones people brought up were the Clemson playoff game from the 2020 season, and the Michigan game, his only win against them in 2019. And so both of those games, by the time this year's Michigan game comes around, that game's going to be 5 years old, and the Clemson playoff game's going to be 4 years old. At a place like Ohio State, 4 years, 5 years, that is an eternity. It's an eternity in college football anyway, but at a place like that, when the pressure is always so high, you can't have that be your signature stuff. It doesn't matter to me that they run through Purdue or Northwestern or Illinois. That's what's expected at Ohio State. But, you know, they have not – they've missed the mark in the last three seasons. And sometimes, like in 2021, you know, I thought they lost to a better Michigan team. And 2022, they got bulldozed at home by Michigan. And last year, they lost to a better Michigan team. That is what it is. But at some point, you got to win those games. And when you're constantly making the same mistakes over and over again – you just think, okay, at what point is it on the guy leading the program?
Yeah, and here's the thing. From the outside looking in, I think a lot of people look at them and they win 11 games, and, you know, they wish their program could do that. But I understand the expectations are absolutely crazy. You have a rabid fan base that wants things to happen. But from the outside looking in, it's really hard to understand what has gone wrong. So I'll ask a guy who's watched every game in the Ryan Day era, what has gone wrong? Is it a lot of different things? Do you think you could point out one thing? What's there?
Well, in 2021, it was, you know, the defense, and in 2022, defensively, they failed in that game. But really, it's been kind of, whether it's Michigan or that Georgia playoff game that they probably should have won, it seems so unfair to just say, like, they tense up in tight moments and Day gets tight. But really, that's what it feels like, and it feels like his biggest problem is, you know, he followed after Urban Meyer, and he's trying to cosplay as Urban Meyer. And, like, after they lost to Michigan the first time, the next year it was like, okay, well, we're going to be tough, and we're going to run the ball against them, and, you know, we're going to get 4 yards a carry, and we're going to play their game and beat them at their game. When it's like, bro, you got C.J. Stroud and Marvin Harrison. What are you doing? Line up five wide and just let it rip. And so it just feels like he's been caught trying to cosplay as somebody else, and when you have the fan base coming down at you in this, the game against Michigan is so important. It feels like instead of stepping out of that and just saying, hey, I'm running this thing the way that I'm doing it, he's trying to do it another way, and he doesn't fit into doing it that way. And to me, that was never more evident than after the Notre Dame game, when after everything Lou Holtz said, and you know, they go to him for the post-game interview, and it would have been one thing if he would have just done that and it would have been over, but before he goes on that little rant, you can see him tap the sports information director Jerry Emig on the shoulder and say, hey, watch this. And to me, that was like, oh, he had this ready. That wasn't something that was off the cuff. It was like, if we beat Notre Dame, I'm going to do this. And it just felt so prepared and so out of place for what he is that it was like, ah, you're kind of phony. And so he has the great thing about sports and the great thing about college football in particular is, you know, this season for them, you have this opportunity in this new system to go on a run and to completely not erase that history because it is what it is, but to change the perception of yourself, which is, you know, well, like I said, the great thing about sports. But to me, when you keep seeing these things over and over again, you think, you know, I'm watching an offensive coordinator who is the head coach right now.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think ultimately, though, of what he said to Lou Holtz? You just thought it was phony?
It was funny. It was funny. And, like, I love that, and I think that there needs to be more of that in college football. But the people who got super fired up about it, I was just like, this.
It's still kind of corny.
It felt really contrived, and, like, I do like that sort of stuff in college football. Sure. I like when we have coaches who go at it. I like when we have conflict and confrontation. But to me, it just felt like this isn't really who you are, and you don't need to be that. It's the same thing with, like, you know, Meyer started calling Michigan, or he wasn't the first to do it, but, you know, not saying Michigan by name, saying the team up north. Jim Trussell said Michigan all the time. And so you don't, when you're Ohio State's coach, you don't need to do everything the exact same way as, you know, the previous guy did before you. But that's a long shadow that Urban Meyer cast, and I don't know if he's been able to get out of that yet.
All right, now you brought up Urban Meyer and perception, and one of the ongoing conversations on my show is about a guy who's really at the top of college football coaching, Kirby Smart. How close is he with all the off-field stuff, with, you know, how great he's been on the field? How close is he to sort of capturing that Urban Meyer, I don't even know how to put it, that persona, that aura? How close is he to that? Because it feels like we are inching closer and closer by every offseason that passes.
It feels like it should be there already, given some of the stuff that's happened. And with him, it's going back to talking about Day and the same thing over and over again. With Georgia, it's the same thing over and over again, just off the field. And at a certain point, I know he came out and was like, hey, we've tried to talk with him about stuff. But, like, to me, it just speaks of a larger problem of kind of what goes on around campuses and how that relationship between football programs and police departments on campus, which is just a whole other discussion. But he should be there, and I think where he's gotten pretty lucky to me is it's such a fast-paced news environment now where 20 minutes after something happens, unless it's like super, super serious, how many more people are going to be they're going to be talking about something else? And that's where, even back in 08, 09, where Meyer didn't have that luxury where, you know, in college football then, a scandal that didn't even have to do anything with, you know, something violent or breaking the law, you could just, like the Ohio State stuff, be trading tattoos for money, like, or selling your stuff for money. That was a massive deal, and now the bar has kind of shifted onto what is the scandal in college football. And I guess at a certain point, people are just like, oh, another speeding ticket for a Georgia player. Like, they're not going to do anything, so, you know, what of it?
Yeah, I guess so. But, like, He's the guy who can take this Nick Saban thing and run with it if he really wanted to, in my opinion.
100%.
Just looking at the, you know, where he's at in the SEC, owning the SEC, potentially being able to be at the top every single year, recruiting at the highest of levels, always having number one recruiting classes. And he has a fan base that is completely bought into him, no matter what has happened off the field, by the way. Like, he has that chance to go that Nick Saban route and really be legendary. But I think there's two ways you can go. You can go the Nick Saban route, you can go the Urban Meyer route. And Urban Meyer was, yes, we always acknowledge him as one of the best college football coaches we have ever seen, but you cannot bring him up without bringing up 41 arrests while he was at Florida. You can't bring him up without talking about everything else.
Yeah, and I don't think that, at least as of right now, that Kirby's done a great job of trying to fight that perception either. And maybe he's just at the point where it really, you know, we throw it around so much where it's just like, oh, it means more. And at Georgia right now, it kind of feels like to that fan base and people around that program, it's just like, well, it means more. We're winning. And they had come off of, you know, what a stretch of even when they were with Mark Richt, where it was like there was Nick Saban, there was Urban Meyer. They were never really the top dog. And now they are, you know, no pun intended, that it's just like, we'll deal with all that stuff when, you know, when it happens. But like, if in an alternate universe, if Kirby Smart was at Florida doing this stuff right now, how would Georgia fans feel about Florida and Kirby Smart?
Yeah. And here's the one thing I do think Kirby Smart has going for him, though, over Urban Meyer. He just seems a little more likable. You know, like, as much as I do think, like, some of the things he says are very ingenuine, like, he just seems like a more likable guy when he gets in front of a camera than Urban Meyer ever was.
He also doesn't feel like he's going to burn himself out just from a longevity standpoint.
Right.
Like, Kirby Smart seems like that is his alma mater. Like, he's locked in there. He's comfortable being in Athens. And he knows now, especially with Nick Saban gone, like, what a weight off of your shoulders that, you know, not only is he gone, you got this new system where, okay, you can take a couple losses and still get in and get the benefit of the doubt playing in a really strong SEC. Like, he's got it made.
Yep. Now, final thing for Colton Denning at Dubsco on X, Two Stripes CPD. Make sure you go subscribe. Also, check out his YouTube channel. Just search Colton Denning in that search bar and you can find it. I need outside perspectives. This is what we need here in Memphis, because sometimes you can get caught in that old echo chamber. What do you think about this Memphis football team this year? Picked to win the AAC. I'd say, you know, look at a lot of publications. They're picked to be the college football playoff representative for the group of five. Should we be that high on them? Should we be able to have those expectations?
100%. I think that whether it's them or, you know, Boise State is another team I'm looking at. Those are the two teams where I think that that's where that playoff spot is going to come from. And even, you know, talking about Florida State and just some of their new faces that they have and sort of the change that they have, I think that game against Florida State for Memphis is like tailor-made on every single level, whether it's you're in this new system, you can afford a loss. You know, you don't want to lose 56-7. That may, if you're, you know, a part of the committee, you may look at that and say, okay, well, we saw them against Florida State and they really got run over. But, you know, say they lose 30-24. Nobody's going to hold that against Memphis. And then you have the most important thing, which is the drama of whether how real it is or not, of just the storyline of going to play Norvell for the first time. And Norvell, you know, facing his old team, and say Memphis goes in there and wins.
Right.
Not only is that a win over, you know, the team who just won the ACC last year and has been predicted to win the ACC again this year, humans are so dumb, we need, like, those little things in our mind that stick in. And for Memphis to go in and beat their former coach, that is going to be a legitimate thing for the committee to be like, not only was that a win, but that just adds a little bit of extra spice on top of it. And I don't think any other, you know, G5, whatever you want to call it now, team has that sort of, not even a double-edged sword, because I think it's a win-win for Memphis. And to me, they're the best team in the conference, and you have all of those pieces back. And I really think it's tailor-made for them to make a run. And it feels like, I'm not the first person to say this about kind of this new era of college football, but whether it's them or Ole Miss especially, it feels like teams now who are kind of on that edge of, you know, we're definitely good enough to be in the playoff. Do we bring in a bunch of transfers and, like, you do it kind of like a, not a last dance season, but like, hey, we're taking a big swing this year,
yeah,
and this is our swing to make it. I think that Memphis has taken that swing, and I would be shocked if they're not at the very least in the mix for the playoff.
Yeah,
but I think they should be that team that gets in.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be tricky for Florida State. It's just a straight-up free shot for Memphis on the road.
Nothing to gain.
Yeah, lack of expectation. Go in there, see what you can do. I'm gonna have high hopes. I'm not gonna expect Memphis to win by any stretch of the imagination, but I saw crazier things. I've seen crazier things. I mean, last year, Memphis went on the road against Mizzou for the most part and played a 7-point game. That was a team that beat Ohio State in the bowl game. Well, granted, Ohio State had nobody really playing, but still, they ended up winning a New Year's Six bowl game. But, Colton, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for the season, and I know we've got some stuff lined up, so I'm super excited, and I hope that I do any of my Memphis takes justice for the Memphis fans out there.
Rock on. Just keep putting out D'Angelo Williams videos, and I think the Memphis fan base will latch on to it.
100%.
Appreciate it, man. That's Colton Denning at Dubsco on X. Two Stripes CPD. Make sure you go subscribe, and then also you can check out his YouTube where he puts up a bunch of old school highlights. Like, it is a treasure trove of college football history. Just type Colton Denning into the search bar. Now, it's the last week of the Summer of 1,000 Engagements. All this week through Saturday, it's a wedding band expo. Buy one wedding band, get a second wedding band half off. 0% down, 0% interest for 12 months, so they have great financing options. You can get a free silicone band with a men's band purchase. And you can get a free vacation. A free vacation for two starting at $24.95 or more. So you spend $24.95 or more, you can get, you know, hotel visits, hotel stays in places like Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Vegas. You can get a 3-night resort stay in the Caribbean. You can get a 4-night carnival cruise. So check that out. You will enjoy it. And there's no stress with a meant-to-be guarantee. You can buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, and you have 365 days to return it, no questions asked. And I know it's the Summer of 1,000 Engagements, but it's not just engagement rings. It's anniversary rings, birthday rings, wedding bands. I got the job rings, both men's and women's styles available. They are on sale. Summer of 1,000 Engagements and free sunny summer giveaway this Saturday. Everyone deserves beautiful jewelry, and everybody deserves a free vacation. The Wedding Band Expo is in-store only, so make sure you see the store for complete details. 5 locations in Memphis and Little Rock. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. Now we need to go ahead and hop into the Blitz. We'll do that next. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And always remember that the Blitz brought to you by Sissy's Law Cabin. Connor, let's hop into it.
Jared Allen agreed on a 3-year, $91 million max extension with the Cavaliers.
Yeah, you remember, like, what happened at the end of this season? You remember, like, all of the conversations about Jared Allen,
yes,
being up for grabs?
Yes.
I mean, I can't think of a player that was less up for grabs. I mean, they gave him a max extension. I think the second one they've given him to this point, really. So it's like, I am kind of frustrated with the fact that we even thought that was a possibility this entire offseason. Because how many discussions did we have about the Grizzlies potentially reaching out, seeing what could happen with Jared Allen? If Marcus Smart, we were talking about Marcus Smart for Jared Allen, straight swaps. But honestly, I think this is good for the Cavaliers. You keep together your starting five. I don't know if Evan Mobley's ready to take on that full role of starting five. Always had my questions about that. One thing they're going to have to take upon themselves, though, is they're going to have to learn how to play with each other a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jared Allen also is going to have to stay on the floor a little bit more. He's had a couple more injuries, nicks and bruises the past couple of years. Didn't play really at all in the playoffs this past season. But I think it makes sense. Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell, I mean, you still have Darius Garland, and you have Jared Allen. You're running it back when no one thought you would run it back. I guess a move could still be made, but there are worse things in the world than the Cavs having the roster that they had last year.
Yes, there are worse things in the world.
It's not ideal.
That being said, they're not going to win anything.
Yeah.
They're not going to win anything with this roster. I understand why they wanted to pay Jared Allen, and I actually think it's a pretty good deal because it's not one of those contracts that's so ridiculous that they can't move it if they have to. Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are going to have to figure out how to play together. If they want that to be the future of the bigs in Cleveland, they're going to have to figure it out because it hasn't looked great. It's some of the best stretches of basketball that they have played has been one of the other guys have been hurt. It's either been Mobley's been healthy and Allen's been hurt. They play great basketball. And then Allen's been healthy. Mobley's been hurt. They play great basketball. They're also going to have to make a decision at some point between Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. That's the one much more important, in my opinion. You can make it work with Allen and Mobley, but Garland and Mitchell just don't really make sense together. And
Donovan Mitchell is the he is a high usage rate guy that puts up shots.
Yeah.
And then you have Darius Garland, who's the ball dominant guy who passes. And it's like, I don't know if those two things jive. Like, somebody has to have the ball in their hands.
What's the biggest problem with the two of them?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a defense.
Yes.
You don't have a defensive stopper on the perimeter.
Yeah. Darius, he's not horrible defensively, but Donovan Mitchell's
bad. He's straight up bad.
Horrible.
He's just bad.
Horrid.
Donovan Mitchell's an excellent offensive player. He's an NBA star. But
you know what's strange to me, though?
Not good on defense.
Because I agree with you, with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. Like, when one's hurt, the other plays better. When the other's hurt, the other plays better. That's weird to me, though, because their skill sets actually do kind of align. Like, their skill sets should work together.
In theory.
Like, Jared Allen is a rebounding, screen-setting menace who can roll to the rim, who can finish. And then Evan Mobley, he has a really solid face-up game. Mm-hmm. He can shoot a three, pretty decent defense. Like, I don't know. He's more offensively inclined. He can play on the perimeter a little bit more, get the ball on the ground as compared to Jared Allen. I don't think they really, like, play the exact same role. I think Evan Mobley can play the four, Jared Allen at the five. Whereas, like, I don't know if Evan Mobley's ever going to grow into a full-time five in this NBA.
What really happened, and I think that they can figure it out, part of their chemistry issues may be that they just simply have not been able to play long stretches of time together.
Maybe.
That could play into it. Part of it, though, is that Evan Mobley had a bit of a down year last year. It wasn't what you were hoping from him, most notably from the three-point line. He wasn't able to stretch the floor like you need him to if he's playing with a big like Jared Allen. So basically what teams were doing is they were packing the paint and they were begging Evan Mobley to shoot a three because he wasn't knocking him down at a high rate. So if he comes into this season with an improved shot, he's knocking down threes, it is probably going to work. Ultimately, though, I do think that the move that they should make and will make is they got to move off of Darius Garland. It's very clear that they have committed to Donovan Mitchell. They want to commit to Jared Allen. They want to commit to Evan Mobley. I think that that's a good decision. Three very good players to start your quote-unquote core with. But you've got to make a decision on Darius Garland. You've got to sell high. I don't understand why they haven't tried to move him yet. If it's just to, you know, not give him to the Lakers, I kind of get that because Dan Gilbert, I don't think, is in the business of helping out LeBron James, even though he brought you a ring.
He very clearly is not.
But I feel like they should be able to get something good for Darius Garland. So maybe they're just trying to hold on to him and drive up that value as much as they can. Their thought process might be if we make it to the deadline, he's still on the team, then a contender out there might really need him and really want him and come and get him. So I'm curious to see what they're doing moving forward because it's a move that Jared Allen's a great basketball player. I agree with it. It's smart to have him on your basketball team. But what is your plan for the future? Because right now, you're in that next tier of the Eastern Conference. But where's your pathway to getting better?
Yes. I will say with Darius Garland, if you wait around too long, you could really completely lose all leverage. I don't think they need to put themselves in that position. Because if Darius Garland, if they run this back out there and Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell start hating each other and start despising each other, how much of a value is Darius Garland going to be to the Cavs? Every other team in the entire NBA is going to look at it and say, well, you guys, you know, you need to get rid of him more than we actually need him. So
yeah.
Where's your leverage going to be at that point? They just need to be careful about how they manage themselves the next couple of years.
I get it, though, because it doesn't seem like there's any bad blood. There's no team chemistry issues technically in the locker room. It seems like they all get along.
They could build.
But they could. There is going to be a moment where if it is not working, somebody's got to be the fall guy. And it's not going to be Evan Mobley. It's not going to be Jared Allen. And it's not going to be Donovan Mitchell.
Yep.
So who does that leave?
And it's, I mean, the more that you get on the precipice of thinking you can break through and don't, the more frustration builds. And I think they've been right there for a couple of years, and that frustration's about to be at a peak going into this.
And the East got better.
Yep, that's true. That's true.
Football is back. The Hall of Fame game is tonight, and it's our first look at the new kickoff rule. Here's a quick kind of spark note version of it. To review, up to two returners kick off from the 35. The other 10 players at the receiving team's 40-yard line. Receiving team is at the 35. Landing zone is between the goal line and the 20-yard line, which is where you can return the ball from.
And then on top of that, you have if the ball lands or is fielded before reaching the 20-yard line, the ball is spotted at the 40, which I don't expect to happen because NFL kickers have a bigger leg than that. Only the kicker or returner can move while the ball is in the air, so you cannot move until the ball is caught. If there is a touchback in the end zone or a ball goes out of the end zone, the ball will be spotted at the 30. That's really good starting field position. And if you kick it out of bounds, it's spotted at the 40 as well like it was previously. I am of the opinion that these kickoff changes have been due for a long, long time. You had way too many examples of big injuries happening on those plays with a 40-yard run-up. It was always a dangerous play. And with the success that we've seen the XFL and the USFL have with these rules, it took substantially too long for them to implement this. Now, I still think it's a year, and then they'll decide if they want to go back to the other way or figure it out from there. But I like it from a player safety standpoint. I think it adds a little more spark and excitement to a play that has lost it over the years.
Because
most of the time, and kickoffs the old way, you kick it out of the back of the end zone. Yeah, it's done. I think it was 20%, right around 20% of kicks got returned last season.
That's it?
I think something like that. Maybe a little bit above 20.
Wow. I mean, it's still, not a that's lot. A low month.
I mean, because everybody's got massive legs, and they're just going to bang it out of the back of the end zone every time they get
a chance. You don't want to risk it.
Yeah, you don't want to risk somebody making a big play on you. I think that it's going to challenge special teams coordinators. They have grown up learning, oh, stay in your lane. You know, they've been scheming up the old kickoff and kickoff return rules for so long. Now it's going to open up for a little bit more inventiveness, and I do like that part of it. You know, you throw a wrinkle into the rules, now these guys have to really earn their money. That's going to be a fun part of it. And I do think that we will have an opportunity for more explosive plays in the return game.
Sure.
That should be fun. I mean, you have a nice run-up for the kick returner or kick returners, and, you know, the blocking schemes could be very interesting to watch. You could do some folds. You could find some ways around it. I'm excited for them. But I do also just want to see how it all plays out and see how, special teams coordinators, coaches decide to go about attacking these new rules.
How does this impact onside kicks?
You have to tell. That's the bad.
That's
the drawback.
Right. You had to tell. That's right.
That's the drawback.
That kind of sucks.
That's the drawback. No surprise.
Doesn't that take the whole point of an onside kick away?
Well, no. Most of the time when you're onside kicking, you are able to know as a receiving team when that's coming, and you put out your hands, team. So that's at the end of the game. You're up by a certain amount of points. They have to get the ball back. They can't stop the clock anymore. They're out of timeouts, that whole thing. So most of the time you know it's coming, so it won't change it in those particular situations at the end of games. What really bothers me, though, because in college, Jake Elliott was a master at this.
Right.
We'd come out in the second half, and we'd act like we're about to kick the ball deep, and he'd do a surprise onside and hop on it after 10 yards because they're a little farther back off of the line. That's gone. You can't do that.
That's kind of what I meant. That's the point of it. Yeah.
That does stink.
Right.
That's not the whole point of an onside kick. Whole point of an onside kick is just to bounce the ball over there, and hopefully you get a nice bounce and you can get on the ball.
It just seems like, though, if they know it's coming.
But you can't steal a possession.
Right.
You can't do it a surprise onside. You can do the obvious onsides. And I just hate the fact that you have to literally walk up to the other team and be like, hey, we're going to onside kick. Like, come on. So that part of it stinks a little bit. But
what's the reasoning for that? Like, why do they want it to be you have to tell the other team?
Well, think about the way it's set up. You have kicking team on the 40-yard line of the receiving team and the receiving teams on the 35-yard line of the receiving team. So you're 5 yards apart. And to do an onside kick, you need to have everybody lined up where they used to be. You can't onside kick it when there's a kicker. You don't have a 10-yard buffer when the kicker already has like a 35-yard buffer between them and their kickoff team. I know this is kind of getting convoluted, a little confusing. But you would have to have your guys with you to do an onside kick. You can't.
No, I get that. I mean, why do they have to tell the defense? You know that. You do it as fast as you can. If they figure it out, they figure it out. I wish that that's how it was. It's the politeness of it bothers me.
The politeness of it, but it makes sense. Me. It makes sense to me.
No, I find the rule stupid.
Yeah, okay.
I find the whole rule stupid. If it's an onside kick, it's an onside kick.
In general, I think you would find like the entire kickoff rule stupid, almost, to a certain extent.
No, I understand the reasoning
for
it.
It has to be that way.
I feel like the kick team could come out, they have a different formation, and that signals to the other team, oh, it's an onside kick. Let's get ready for it. Like, I don't think that you have to tell them, hey, by the way, we're onside kicking now.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I find that whole thing stupid.
I guess.
You can have the new kickoff rule while still having the surprise onside kick. I think that there's a world where you can still have both. Because if you're the offense, you know that you're doing it. If you're the kick team, you know that you're going to do it. It's not like you're going to surprise the kicker with it.
It's a completely different set of lineup. Like, you're lining up completely different, though.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. The receiving team has to figure that out.
Okay.
That's what I mean. That's the whole point of an onside kick. It's a surprise.
If they run out there at the 35 like they're normally doing, and you're doing an onside kick, they should know better is the point.
Yes. That's my point.
Yeah.
Versus an NFL.
I don't know. I'll respectfully disagree with you. I'll respectfully disagree, of course. But we'll see it in action tonight, and we'll see how it looks.
Is this because I said the Houston's comment?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll come back, wrap up this show with the Rewind right here on 99 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality.
You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!